honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with a World War II veteran who sure doesn't seem like he's 96 years old, does he? He still drives to work 5 days a week, and the nature of that work is pretty remarkable. We may have to extend this conversation into another episode to capture all of that, but when we left off with Herb Ford, he was relating some of his memories from the late 1940s, when he was assigned to a massive building in the Washington, D.C. area that was only a few years old. He had served in the Merchant Marine and the Army Air Corps, and was stationed at the Pentagon when the transition from U.S. Army Air Corps to U.S. Air Force occurred. I know from there you went to college, but did you think at all about making the Air Force a career?
No, I didn't. I didn't. Near the end of my service, when it was known that I was coming to the end of my hitch, there were requests coming to me from, three or four places that I would re-up for three more years and I would have my last rocker. I would become a master sergeant. And that's a pretty good rank to have as an enlisted person, you know. Mm-hmm. But I never thought about officer candidate school or anything like that. And then as I came rather near the end of my career, I knew that I needed some education. I was still a country bumpkin. So I decided that I was definitely going to get out and start my education.
And so Pacific Union College was the choice because of the church affiliation?
Yes, but more so because my teachers at the academy in South Texas in my high school, several of them had been graduates of Pacific Union College. How they made their way from California to Texas, I don't know. But anyhow, they made the college sound so good that I determined that I would go there.
You know, there's an important question that I haven't asked you, because I'm thinking about, you know, your three daughters and your four grandchildren and your seven great-grandchildren. They wouldn't be here without a significant detail. Where in this whole timeline did you meet your wife?
Yes, I was stationed at Hamilton Field during the Korean War. Hamilton Field is just north of San Francisco. When I was first assigned there, I told the major who was in charge of the unit that as a Seventh-day Adventist Christian, I could not work on Saturday. And he said, Ford, he said, that's impossible. We're working 7 days a week, almost 24 hours a day, getting all these people back to active duty. And that was on a Monday. And I said, I understand that, sir, but I cannot work on the Sabbath day. My conscience will not allow that. And so the major said, I don't know what we'll do. But anyhow, I was assigned as chief of the officers' classification section there. On Wednesday, I saw him again. He said, I haven't worked out anything yet, Ford. But then on Friday, we were having an official organization of this unit, because this was all brand new stuff. So he puts out the assignments for the different people in the unit, and he said, Sergeant Ford will be in charge of the officer's classification section, except on Saturday when he goes to church, and Sergeant Lucich will be in charge of the unit that day. And he looks at me, he says, does that take care of it, Ford? I said, sir, that does. Yes, thank you. Anyhow, I went then to church on that Saturday, to the Berkeley Adventist Church. And there at that church was the young lady who would become my wife of the future. This went on, but I became very enamored of her best friend. And it was an enamorment, but also it was a simpatico type of thing, because that young lady's mother was dying of cancer at the time. And I, in this whole thing, became engaged, not officially engaged, but understood engaged to her. And then I was lecturing at Hamilton Field to these officers that were coming back to active duty in preparation of their records. And my throat, my tonsils became infected and everything else. And so I went into the hospital. And as I'm in the hospital, I'm thinking very, very much about this engagement and everything else. And I'm also thinking about that other young lady that was there. And I suddenly realized that really it was that other young lady that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. And so that, of course, made me become the worst person in the world to the young lady of engagement. It took me a long, long time, nearly half a year, using every device I could think of. My wife at that time was a piano student of the leading piano teacher in the greater San Francisco Bay Area, Dr. Alexander Lieberman. And she, along with one other of his students, Samuel Lipman, was scheduled to open the San Francisco Symphony with Pierre Montour, the conductor. She, of course, was a piano student at Mills College at that time. Well, anyhow, I devised ways to make myself very accomplished in classical music to try to be close to her, and that seemed to work. But things went on, and we became very much a couple, and then it was a wonderful time. And the other young lady, we kept close to her, and she had a very successful marriage while we were there, too. So it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but still I was a bad, bad boy, that's for sure.
Well, it kind of reminds me of something that I think of a lot, that God's plans are always better than our plans. And I guess if you had not exercised your conscience and held to your belief about the Sabbath, you never would have met your wife to begin with, right?
That's right. That's right. I would about that, I came back from having been at church on Saturday, and on Sunday morning, I came into the day room of the squadron. And the first sergeant saw me. His name was Aaron Brown. And he said, "Ford," he said, "where were you yesterday?" And I said, "I was at church." He said, "Are you a Seventh-day Adventist?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Well, I'm an Adventist too." I said, "Well, where were you yesterday?" And he said, I couldn't get off. Nobody could get off. I said, "Listen." I said, "Talk to the major. He's a reasonable man." And he did, and we went to church together the next Saturday, which was interesting.
I don't want to make a leap that isn't there, but it kind of sounds like even a tonsil infection was a silver lining to this thing, because it gave you the time to figure out who you wanted to be with.
It surely did. That's the truth. Yeah, right.
How long were you two married?
64 and a half years. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, when it was known on the campus of our full engagement and everything, the dean of women in the hall that my future wife was in, she told my wife, "You shouldn't marry that man. He'll never be any good for you." And my wife said, "Well, we'll see." And it was 64 and a half years that we were together.
And anytime I have the privilege of meeting someone who can say that, I want to ask them how they did it, right? What was the secret? What advice would you have for someone else who would like their marriage to last that way?
Well, you never want to push for your way too much. And in our situation, I think our spiritual life was a bond that we enjoyed, and it was kind of a glue that held us together, too.
Well, and so we've heard how you got a taste of World War II in the Merchant Marine. You're even there in Tokyo Bay when they're signing the surrender. Then you end up in the Army Air Corps. You're there in the Pentagon as it transitions to the Air Force. But in your early career, you're doing public relations for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and you got to know a gentleman who is probably the most famous conscientious objector. We heard about your conscience and how it worked for you. Tell me about Desmond Doss. Hacksaw Ridge is a movie now that has made his name a household name even more than before, but you knew him back in the 50s?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I once had an editor of a publishing house ask me if I wouldn't write a book about Desmond Doss, but I told him no, I couldn't because I was working on two other books at the same time. But anyhow, on at least two occasions, I was able to place Desmond Doss on television shows. Art Linkletter show was one of them, and one was another CBS West Coast regional show. And Des and I talked quite a bit together. Being of the same faith, we kind of bonded with that too. He was a true, he sounded like a true hayseed. I mean, you know, he came out of the back country, as it were. But what a heart he had. He just was full of love for people. I don't think the Congressional Medal of Honor could have gone to any person more deserving than he, in terms of heart, as well as action of saving lives that he did on that escarpment.
Is there an element of that story? And I heard that when they made the film Hacksaw Ridge, there was part of the true story they wouldn't even put in the film because they said that's just not believable enough, right? I mean, that is there a part of his story and what he did there on Okinawa that really touches your heart or really impresses you?
Well, the fact that he would overcome fear, just set it aside, believing that he would be taken care of by his relationship with the divine. That, of course, is something not too many people attempt to harness, you know. I think his determination to get every person he could possibly get to save was an example of what the good book tells us, that heaven wants to save every person possible.
They really did capture that element of it in the film where he says over and over, help me get one more. Was there anything maybe that the film didn't have that you think we ought to know about a guy that you knew better than we did?
No, I don't think so. His wife was a graduate of Pacific Union College, which is another little tie that I take hold of. We just had these momentary times together, you know. Before the Linkletter show, I talked with him maybe for a full hour while we were waiting for the Goodell production people to get everything ready. I just came to admire the man very much.
Did you ever regret not writing that book?
No. I just write what I can and leave it to somebody else to do the other things.
And how many books have you written?
Well, I've written a dozen of them. Four of them have been about Pitcairn Island, different aspects of it. And the others have been stories of missionaries overseas and story of the underground leader, John Widener. Just books that have kind of been forced on me via my public relations work.
Believe it or not, he is still working on new books, four manuscripts in progress, in fact. And if you enjoy listening to Hometown Heroes, I know you'd love Mr. Ford's book, Flee the Captor. That tells the story of his late friend John Widener, who saved the lives not only of more than 100 Allied aviators during World War II, but more than 800 Jews as well through his work with the Dutch Paris Underground. I have that book linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, but we're going to have to save Mr. Ford's comments about that book till next week, because this hour has flown right by. We do have much more to explore. The Pitcairn Island Study Center he founded and still runs at age 96, and his recent honor flight to Washington, D.C. where the statue of the flag raising atop Iwo Jima's Mount Suribachi at the Marine Corps War Memorial held special significance to him. One of the men depicted in that statue was his classmate back in South Texas. So don't miss the rest of our conversation with Herbert Ford in our next episode, and thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.